Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
September 5th, 2006, the Digital Story Show with Derek Story. Today's topic, event photography. I'm going to talk about event photography, and I have a very good friend that's going to drop in to talk about it with me. His name is James Duncan Davidson, and he is an event photographer. He shoots conferences for both O'Reilly Media, and he just covered recently WWDC, the Worldwide Developers Conference for Apple Computer. He's a terrific event photographer, and he's going to talk about all those wild things, those obstacles that you have to overcome in order to get good shots. Things such as speakers dancing around on a stage in low lighting, and crowds and people shots and all that good stuff. And yet, you've got to come away with a portfolio of images that makes the client happy. Now, the cool thing about talking about event photography, even if you're not that type of photographer per se, the tips that you'll learn from James will be helpful for shooting graduations and weddings and all sorts of stuff. So it's really an interesting topic. It's a challenging assignment, and I think you'll enjoy what he has to say. Now, when we come back from the interview, I have a little bit of housekeeping to take care of, including announcing the September photo assignment. So let's first check in with James, and then I'll be back. I'm with James Duncan Davison, a good friend and fellow photographer. And James has been shooting O'Reilly conferences now for, I believe, a couple of years. Is that right, James?
Yeah, it will be 2 years at the end of this year, so two full years. It's actually been shorter and longer than I really, really would have anticipated.
Two full years, yes. So I'm going to tell you just a little bit about the conferences, but really what I want James to do is talk about how he's been shooting them and his approach to them. So anyway, I know all about these things as I did them for a little while myself. And basically, O'Reilly Media has a thriving conference business, and they like to document it both for publishing online during the conference, photos after the conference, and then, of course, you know, sponsors and so forth need shots also. So there's all sorts of work to happen there, and it's a very busy week, isn't it?
It's a heck of a busy week. You start in the day before the conference starts, and you go and you check out where you're going to be shooting. And then you have to meet with everybody and find out, well, what are the particular needs for this particular conference? And then starting the first day, it's just go, 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 go. Especially with the trend towards the single-track conferences that O'Reilly is doing, where you have keynote-level quality content all day long. You can't just show up in the morning, do a few shots, and run away. It's just, it's busy all the way through.
Yeah, they're totally wild experience. Now, James lives in Portland, but he was down to Northern California for some other work, and we were having lunch yesterday, and so we're talking about his gig, and it was just sort of doing a check-in. And one thing that he mentioned to me that I thought was good was how the evolution of his photography has happened over the course of the conferences, and especially how he evaluates his work and then, you know, approaches the shoot differently the next time he does it. So, you know, maybe you could just talk a little bit about that process and how your shoots in the early days went and compared to how they're going now.
Well, it has been a process. Each and every conference has built upon the work of the previous one. The first conference I shot, which was Emerging Technology 2005, I walked in there and, you know, I knew all about taking a picture. I knew how to do that part of the ball game, but I had no idea what I was really walking into. I mean, I had all these people that were going by on stage. I had to get shots of them. I had to get shots of the crowd. I had to figure out what O'Reilly wanted for shots, because anybody who's done photography for a client knows that what they tell you they want and what they really want are actually two different things, right? I mean, they're usually right about half of what they want, but afterwards there's always the inevitable, but what about this? So that first conference was just mostly about keeping my head above water and swimming as fast as I could. For example, the thing that first conference taught me was I had to shoot raw. I tried shooting the conference in JPEG, and it was not working because of changing light conditions inside of places that hold conferences. You know, light color is different between each room. And even if you can set your white balance right, you still don't want to rely on that totally. You want to be able to provide good images for the client. Then after that experience, after that first conference experience, I was able to take a look at what I'd done well and what I hadn't done well. And I noticed several things. One is that my technique for shooting speakers needed to change a little bit. I needed to figure out how to get my shutter speed up a little bit. I needed to figure out how not to have my equipment let me down. I had to figure out how to take pictures in the dark because these places are usually darkly lit. But I was able to go into the next conference and build upon that knowledge. And after a few cycles of that, the O'Reilly people also started seeing what I was doing. And they saw their own patterns emerge in what I was working on. So the marketing people came to me and they said, hey, look, we need you to focus a little bit on these kinds of pictures. They really wanted crowd shots and conversation shots for the brochures, because when marketing people try to market a conference, they want to show people engaging with each other. Of course, the news people, the PR people, they want pictures of the keynotes. You know, keynotes are easy. The people interacting is a bit tougher. And every shoot has just evolved on top of the previous one. Every time I go away and I have sometimes a couple weeks, sometimes a month or two between conferences to let whatever it was I learned sink in. And this year, the thing that I'm trying to figure out how to do with the photography is actually increase the feedback loop. So it's no longer about photographic technique. It's about what I do with the pictures. How fast can I get some pictures up in front of the crowd? So, for example, this year, there's been several times when we actually do a handoff of pictures, you know, midstream through the conference to the marketing people, who will then put it into slides that are being shown between keynote presentations. And it's amazing when you watch people in the audience see themselves or see other people they know on the screen in a picture that was taken yesterday. They all go, "Wah!" You know, they really like that. And so so this year, it's I'm really focusing on that aspect. But, you know, there's also the technical aspects I focus on every time.
I love that idea. It reminds me of what I see some wedding photographers do, where they'll process the images from the ceremony really quickly and then have a slideshow running at the reception on the same day of the wedding. And again, there's that whole, wow, this just happened a little bit ago, and there I am, or there they are. And it's kind of cool stuff.
It's very cool stuff. That one of the things I've noticed about conferences, because I've been able to study the conferences as well as I see all these, it's been probably 14 or 15 so far, and conferences that have tight feedback loops, where there's that tight sense of community, do better than conferences that don't. And so now one of the things I'm trying to figure out, now that I'm watching how these feedback loops set up, is how can I do this better? How can I play a bigger part in increasing the experience for the people that are there, as well as communicating that conference to people outside of that conference?
That's cool. Hey, well, let's break this down technically a little bit, because there are some things I want you to talk about. One of them is lighting itself, or lack thereof, in conference. Another is, let's talk about shutter speed and speaker movement, and, you know, what the ramifications are of that, and why you want to control your shutter speed when you're, you know, photographing people that are talking on stage.
Sure. So lighting. Lighting is, of course, lighting. Photography is all about lighting. You don't have light, you don't have pictures. But when you go into a show and there's not a huge production budget, when there's a moderate production budget, there's only so much light that you're going to get up on stage. And this was something I ran into a lot last year. This is my big challenge last year, was conquering how to take pictures in this environment. And so I ended up really leaning on the fast lenses. I have a stack of very fast lenses now because of that. I shoot f2.8 is the narrowest aperture I'll shoot usually in one of these conference rooms, and sometimes I'll even break out the 50mm 1.4 so that I have enough room to get the picture. But even then, I'm still at the edge of the equipment. I'm typically shooting at ISO 1600, and I'm shooting at f2.8, maybe f4 if I can get away with it on a main stage that's been lit enough. And that's at 125th. Now, at 125th, people will still blur, especially speakers that get really agitated and they're really jumping around. Rommel at OSCON. I never can remember what his real name is. Lefkowitz. Rommel on stage, this guy will bounce from end to end of the stage every 5 seconds. I got one picture that was usable from him out of, I probably cranked off 120 frames because I knew it was going to be hard to get this guy. And, that's shooting at 125th because that's all I had.
It's almost like you want to put a rope around their feet and nail them down to the stage for a minute. But yeah, that's it exactly, because if you don't have the fast lenses, and of course you and I were talking yesterday about the new f1.2 that Canon has announced. Neither one of us has seen it yet, but because of the value of existing light photography, their 1.2 that buys you another shutter speed right there. But you're right. It's if you're trying to shoot these things at a 15th of a second or a 30th of a second, even people who don't bounce around on stage, you're going to get a lot of motion blur, aren't you?
You're going to get an incredible amount of motion blur in places you wouldn't expect. When people are talking on stage, you can get motion blur on their lips. And that will make a really mushy picture because you won't get the solid action that you're looking for. A lot of what you have to do is time. You actually have to put your mind into what the speaker is saying, what the speaker is doing, so that you can predict when he's going to stop with a gesture. If you're watching somebody speak, like I'm doing right in front of you, even though our listeners can't hear that, there are times when your hands stop moving and when your face will stop moving just long enough to make a point. And those are the times when you can usually get a workable shot. Those are my safe shots now. Now that I've learned where those prop up and where those get timed, those are my very safe shots because I can go to that, I can get a few of those of each speaker, and I know I have something that works. And then I can try to get experimental.
Yeah, one of my favorite Northern Exposure episodes, that old one-hour show that was set up in Alaska, was the Indian was talking about how to catch fish. And he says, in order to catch fish, you have to think like a fish. And then he sort of explained that whole thing. And in order to catch a good speaker shot, you sort of have to think like the speaker that's up there, don't you?
You definitely do. Every time a speaker goes up, I find myself going through a similar pattern. The first 5 minutes, I'll crank out some shots because you never know when you might get lucky and get one of those shots that works. But the first 5 minutes, I'm really watching the speaker and trying to figure out what kind of speaker they are. And then based on that, I can modify what I'm about to do in the next 5 minutes to try to get a really good picture of them. Some speakers hang out right behind the podium and they won't move anywhere. Some speakers travel the stage up and down. Some speakers will favor one part of the stage or another. And once I can see what they favor, I can maybe make a lens change and then move myself in the room to get a good shot of that. For example, at OSCON this last July in Portland, Kathy Sierra, speaking on Tuesday night, was on stage, and she dominated the middle of the stage. She was right in the middle where everybody could see her, and it was such a fascinating kind of place that she picked compared to what other speakers picked that I was able to see, I can actually sneak my way behind stage and get this shot of her speaking to the audience and see the audience. But you don't see that until you've watched the speaker in action for a little while. And then you have to be careful to monitor how much time you have, because some speakers will be up for 15 minutes and that's it.
Yeah, I've actually been caught off guard by that, where suddenly they're not there anymore. And I was sort of, playing around with my settings and then going, oh, man, I'm out of time. Of course, the absolute worst situation of that is when they do a fast kiss at the ceremony at a wedding and you go, oh my God, they're kissing right now, and I have my camera. But, one thing, back to the shutter speed thing I want to say is that when I first started shooting events and trying to shoot these existing light shots, I thought my focus was off. because, you know, all my shots look soft. And I go, what's wrong here? Is my lens not focusing or whatever? And it's that very subtle movement that you're talking about when you're shooting at those longer shutter speeds. My focus was fine. It was just too much movement.
Exactly right, because I've been able to go into some of these places and strategically start hiding a few flashes around. I've only started doing this recently because in some of the events I still don't have as much light as I would like. Now, I don't like doing a lot of it because I want my pictures to tell a story of what was there, not what I created using artificial light. But sometimes I'll skim in just a little bit more light to maybe pick up another stop so that I can get my shutter speed up to a 250th. And usually that won't interfere too much with the natural lighting, but I can further freeze to people's faces. Now, sometimes you can do that, sometimes you can't. Sometimes flash photography is usable, sometimes it's not.
So another thing I wanted to ask you about, now when you're shooting these conferences, you don't have to worry about model releases because sort of everyone that's there is you know, given their permission. But how do you approach the interactions with people? I mean, do people tell you not to take their picture or do they turn away from you? And, you know, I mean, how do you handle that whole human relationship part of the job there?
That's actually a really good thing to talk about because it took me a while to really kind of get on top of that. Typically, at the O'Reilly conferences where I already know enough of the people that are at the conferences now, because O'Reilly has kind of a core group of people that are they seem to show up at every third conference. And once you get to know them, then they, when they're interacting with somebody and the other person hasn't seen the photographer, i.e. me running around, they can say, oh yeah, he's okay. And that softens a lot of negative reaction. But I will watch for people's body language. Some people, they don't care about having their picture taken. They're perfectly comfortable with it. Some people will be hesitant because they don't know what to do. There's a lot of people have that human need to say, well, how would I look in a picture? Could you direct me? And even when they're speaking to somebody else, they'll kind of look over like, what should I do? And I'll have to make a quick motion like, be natural, do what you're doing. And some people really don't want to have their picture taken. And I've learned how to read that. There's a couple of body language cues that come across very strongly from people that don't want to be photographed. And in that case, I just say, you know, thanks or thumbs up or, you know, make some sign that, yes, I understand, and I'll go and pick another shot.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And in fact, I think the key for me a lot of times is actually getting the shot before they notice that I'm going to take it. And then, of course, hanging around long enough so they know that I've taken their shot, but I've already gotten the shot that I wanted. And then maybe click off another one just sort of as a courtesy thing to say that we've acknowledged each other. But I had this interesting experience back when on a commercial shoot, all I had to do was get a picture of this lady talking on the phone. And we could not get a natural picture. I mean, you know, and she was actually a model. We could not get a natural picture. Every time we did it, there is something wrong with it. It looked stiff. It looked horrible. And it was that whole thing of the minute I pointed a camera at her, something that she does all the time, she couldn't do it right. And so what I ended up having to do was actually set up an actual customer service cubicle and just have someone actually working on the phone and then, you know, grab shots to, you know, when they were working and so absorbed in this cranky customer that they didn't know I was there anymore. And then I got all sorts of great shots. It's funny, the minute you point a camera at someone, their whole body language, everything about them changes a little bit.
It does. It's like Schrödinger's cat. You know, you open up the box, i.e. the cat sees you standing there. They totally change their behavior. And sometimes for the better and sometimes for the worse. I agree with you that trying to get the shot before they really notice that you're there is that's when you go get the most natural shots. Usually when I'm doing my walkabouts through the conference halls, I'll actually have one of my longer lenses on so I can do exactly that. I'll have the 70 to 200 lens on and I'll have it on a monopod so I can be, you know, 20 feet, 30 feet, 40 feet away from somebody. And even though they see somebody running around with a long lens, it's actually at some distances kind of hard to gauge, is that lens pointed directly at me or not, unless you're looking directly at the photographer, in which case all bets are off. But one of the things I've noticed that people do when they don't know what to do when they're having their picture taken is they'll look right at the camera. Like I've had the crowd shots where there's the guy who will just beam you right in the eye. He's staring you down. And you can take several shots over the course of like 2 minutes. Every shot, he'll be there staring at you.
Yeah, I hate those guys. So, yeah, so, you know, just the part I wanted to follow up on that is I like the long lens too. And then the one thing I do though, because I just feel like it's sort of honest, is after I get the long lens shot, then, you know, find some way to let them know I'm taking their picture or have taken their picture. And I've only had, I think, once or twice over all the years, someone say, I'd appreciate if you didn't use that picture. And then I'll just say, fine, actually, why don't we just take it off right now? And I'll just take it off. But that's rarely the case. You know, it's most of the time, like you said, I think people have a harder time with knowing their picture's being taken than the fact that you took their picture.
Exactly. It is, because when you can capture their picture without them knowing, and then you walk over and you wait for a break, and then you kind of flip the camera around, you show them on the LCD screen that you caught them. Usually they're like, oh, that's great. And occasionally you'll get, especially women, will say, ooh, that's a horrible picture of me. Never use it. And I'll look at it again. And if it's, you know, if I can see where they're coming from, if I know that when they see it again, they'll cringe. Yeah, I'll do the same thing. I'll go off and hit delete and just rip it right off. And that's one of the nice things about having digital, is both you can show the people what you just did, as well as if it's something they're not comfortable with, you can just take it right off and they know right away it won't get used.
Yeah, I love that too. I just think digital photography has so many nice advantages. So there's one other thing I wanted to touch on before we wrap this up. And so I found out during the week of the Worldwide Developers Conference that you were their photographer. And that's a hard gig to break into. I've worked with Apple. I know it's not easy. And I thought, well, you know, so here you are. You're building your photographer career here. You want to just talk a little bit about leveraging one job into another and you know, how that worked. So you got the WWDC job.
Yeah, the WWDC job was actually it was a blessing that just came on a plate. But I have had a relationship with some of the Apple Developer Connection people for a while. I've done some writing with them on technical topics. And so they were moderately aware of what I was doing with photography. And one time, I think it was probably April this year, I was over there talking with them about other things, and the subject of photography came up, and I kind of said, well, you know, I do this stuff for O'Reilly, and it's interesting how we're getting all the crowd shots and how it evolves over time. And there was an instantaneous strong response that they had, which was, well, would you like to do it for us? And I didn't even hesitate. I was like, heck yeah, I'd love to do it. Of course, it wasn't quite that easy. We had to go back and forth and figure out all the details. But it really was a case of I had proven work product that I could show that I'd done at other conferences. And even though WWDC is a different conference than the O'Reilly conferences, and even though what they were wanting out of pictures was different than what the O'Reilly people want, I had something established I could show them, and I could say, look, you know, this is the first time, if we do this for the first time, we don't know what kind of shots we're going to get, but at least you know that I can do these kinds of shots, and you're going to get some good crowd shots, and you're going to get good people interacting shots, because I can show you I've done that before. And so there was a bit of a trust buildup that happened from having that existing work and going in and working with them. But interestingly enough, working on a WWDC conference team was almost a repeat of what I had had with O'Reilly a year and a half before, because I was with a new group of people. They didn't really know what I could do, especially the people that hadn't signed me on. You know, the operations people, the people that had to deal with getting me badged, the people that had to figure out, okay, are we going to let this photographer into these areas? Because I actually had carte blanche access to a lot of WWDC. You couldn't take a camera into the sessions, for example, and yet I was running around with my long lens. But to do that, you had to have people that would trust you to get you the credentials to do so. And that really happened just right at the very beginning of the conference. The night before the conference, I went out and took a picture, a nighttime shot of the conference facility. And they really loved the shot. They loved it so much that they put it onto the conference homepage the next day. And as soon as that started happening, all the walls came down and I was able to work with everybody. And they were like, oh, you're the guy who did this. Okay, here, no problem. Or, for example, the campus bash on Thursday, you know, I had a mystery person that was like, oh, you're the guy who's doing the photography? Cool. And they escorted me up to several hard-to-access balconies all around campus so I could get those interesting aerial shots. But it was all about trust, right? I started out with a little bit of trust from having done the O'Reilly conferences, and then throughout the week building up more trust and showing what I could do. And it really made the show something else.
Again, this is where the advantage of digital photography comes in, because you know you can get those shots posted or show them to people really fast. They can see that you know what you're doing, not only taking the picture, but you know knowing how to get it ready to publish. And then you're still in the middle of the shoot. Next thing you know, everyone's your friend.
Exactly. It's a building process. Now, the thing I'm really going to be interested in is, what lessons have I internalized from the WWDC experience that I take back into the O'Reilly, the next O'Reilly conference I do? I've already seen some of the lessons I learned pop up in photography that's happened outside of conferences. Conference photography, like wedding photography, is so demanding that when I get to actually take a little bit of time and plan a shot, when I get to think about a shot, I can see all my other work improving because of what I have to do in the heat of the moment. And so it's going to be curious. It's going to be interesting to me to see how all that pans out into the rest of my photography and how that builds on what I've done so far.
Well, we'll get to see pretty soon. Are you going to cover the Euro OSCON conference? Are you going over the pond?
I am indeed. I'm going to head out, and I'll be there the entire time in Brussels.
That sounds like a pretty rough assignment. So where can we see more of your work?
So the best place to see my work is my Flickr stream. flickr.com/photos/x180 or you can hit my personal website, duncandavidson.com, and at the bottom there's a link to photos, and that'll take you straight to my Flickr stream. One of the things that I need to do is, now that my professional photography career is really starting to build on top of it, or is starting to take off, it's really, I'm having event upon event upon event build on each other. I need to do a little bit more in the way of making sure that when you hit my homepage, you're going right to some of my best photography. But you can get there now through DuncanDavidson.com, and that's only going to get better.
It's time to build that proverbial photography website.
It is indeed. Actually, that's been high on my to-do list for a little while. But it is interesting. These things do build organically. And so I'm right in the middle of this huge turn in kind of what I'm doing with the promotion part of my photographic business, and we're going to see how that works out.
I have a feeling it's going to work out pretty well. Hey, it was great chatting with you. Thanks for stopping by, and I look forward to seeing your shots from Europe.
Likewise, I'll send you some.
Good stuff indeed. Thanks so much, James. It was a pleasure talking with you, and I think you gave us lots to think about. Now, let's get to digital story for just a moment. First of all, I want to talk about photo assignment. The August photo assignment is posted. It was read, and it is fabulous. I think you're really going to love this gallery. If you haven't checked it out yet, go over to thedigitalstory.com and take a look. You can always see all the photo assignments by going to the photo assignment selection under the Jump To menu that's in the upper right-hand corner of the page, and take a look at the August gallery. I think you're going to like what you see. Now, the September photo assignment. What is that going to be? The September photo assignment is going to be Circle. Circle, yes. So I think this is fraught with not challenges, but fraught with potential. There are so many circles in life all around us, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what you find, what you capture, and what you send in, and ultimately what I'll be posting. So the September photo assignment is Circle, and make sure you get a good round shot. Okay, grab shots. Doing great. Thanks so much. Keep them rolling in. As I've said so many times, they are the joy of my life. So let's keep the happiness flowing. And also, I just want to mention real quick, Boink Software, our sponsor, the makers of Photomagico. Thanks so much, guys, for supporting the show and getting behind us all the way. So I think that's it for this week. We're looking good. Nice interview with James Duncan Davidson. We got a great gallery up for August. And you're going to get to working on Circle for your September photo assignment. Keep those grab shots coming in. Go out there and take some shots, and I will see you next week. Bye-bye now.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, web blogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.